So today's parsha is called Parshas Mishpatim. It has many, many of the mitzvahs, especially the mitzvahs that are civil, Jewish civil law. Matter of fact, the word Mishpatim, which is the name of the parsha, is a category of mitzvah that is logical. The Torah tells us there are three kinds of mitzvahs: Eidos, Chukim, and Mishpatim, mitzvahs that are completely supra-rational. They're not according to logic. There is a logic to them. And of course, Hashem has a logic to them. Sometimes we know it. Sometimes we don't know it. Only way we would know it is if it was revealed to us through our prophets, through our mystics. Very famously, the mitzvah of Parah Aduma, the red heifer, is considered to be a prime example of a chok, a mitzvah that has no logical basis to it. There is an effect of the mitzvah, not to be confused with
I'm
the
sorry, Rabbi, which mitzvah is that?
Parah Aduma, the red heifer. And that mitzvah is that if a person comes in contact with a corpse, dead body, or you're in the same house under the same roof as a corpse, then you are tameh, you're ritually impure, you cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash. The problem of being tameh, the result of being tameh is ritually impure, means you cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash, into the temple. You cannot eat any meat that comes from a karban, from a sacrifice. And if you're a Kohen, you can't eat even the truma and other gifts that are given to the Kohen, which are not offerings, but simply gifts. So there are certain spiritual ritual parameters, effects of tumah, of impurity. There is no prohibition to be tamei, but if you are tamei, you cannot do certain things, mainly for us Yisraelim, and nowadays for us Jews with no Beis HaMikdash, you can't go onto the Temple Mount. So one of the big problems, besides the Arabs who don't let the Jews go on the Temple Mount, but you're not allowed to go on the Temple Mount today unless you're in a state of ritual purity, which is impossible without the Parah Aduma, the red heifer. It is a cow that has no more than two black hairs, completely red-haired cow. It never did any work. It's a certain age. It has to be slaughtered and cremated. You take some of the ashes, you mix it with spring water, and you take a little bit of grass, special kind of grass, and you dip it in the spring water, and you sprinkle it on the person. 3 days after, the person became impure, 7 days again, a second time after, but then after that, the person immersed in the mikvah. It's a whole process. The entire process is completely not logical. And
Rabbi, I apologize for interrupting again, but don't people go on Temple Mount? They just go to mikvah before?
Doesn't help, because the purity of the state of purity that's necessary to go onto the Temple Mount can only be attained, not through a mikvah, but can only be attained by having the mixture of water that is mixed with the ash of the cremated red cow, and that we don't have today, plain and simple.
So a Chabad rabbi wouldn't go to Temple Mount today?
No. A Chabad rabbi should hopefully not go to Temple Mount. Having said that, just to be very clear, there are many religious Jews that go on the Temple Mount, but what they do is they go to the part of the Temple Mount that was added, and in the plaza of the Temple Mountain is not the same size as the original Temple Mountain in the times of King David and King Solomon, David and Shlomo. It was enlarged very greatly enlarged by King Herod, by Hurdus, King Herod, 100 years before the destruction of the second temple. That means a good 700 years plus after the temple was built by Solomon and David, prepared it. There was a Jewish king whose name was Herod, who enlarged the plaza to very much so. The original Temple Mount was 500 cubits by 500 cubits. A cubit is about a foot and a half, let's say, roughly. So it's only about 750 feet by 750 feet. Today, the Temple Mount is many times that size. So if you know, and that's an if you know where the lines are, then you are allowed to go on the Temple Mount, but just not to the original Temple Mount, because that's where the holiness is. The rest of the Temple Mount, even though it looks like the Temple Mount, has sanctity, but the sanctity of the city of Jerusalem, not the sanctity of the mountain. It's not the original mountain, plain and simple. So where religious Jews go is to those parts of the Temple Mountain that are definitely not part of the original mountain. I will tell you that the Al-Aqsa Mosque is definitely part of the original Temple Mountain. So, not the Al-Aqsa, but the Dome of the Rock. The Dome of the Rock is definitely part of the Temple Mountain. A religious Jew should not go into the Dome of the Rock. The mosque may or may not be. I don't know if you can go into the mosque anyway, but it may or may not be. It may be outside.
But where they consider to be that rock, that part of the original Temple Mount.
Where the original Temple Mount is, you're not allowed to go according to Jewish law if you're in a state.
No, I know. I'm saying where the Muslims consider that like that rock to be, that's where.
That's definitely Temple
we're not
Mount.
Allowed to go there.
Yep. That is definitely part of the original Temple Mount. Yeah. There's an archaeological debate whether or not that area was ever part of the temple itself, or it was outside the building of the temple, but in the temple precincts. So the Beis HaMikdash had a big building and then a big courtyard around it. So the Al-Aqsa Mosque, not to keep saying about the Dome of the Rock, has, according to many opinions, is not the place where the original temple, the building was, but it's part of the courtyard. Maybe it's the Mizbeach, the altar. At any rate, it was definitely part of the mountain area. So you can't go there without having the ashes of the paradum of this red heifer mixed with water sprinkled on you 3 days and 7 days after contact with the corpse and then immersing in a mikveh. It's a whole process, as I said, illogical. Another example that is currently practiced of an illogical mitzvah is the mitzvah of keeping kosher. It's completely illogical. A completely healthy animal, even a cow or a sheep or a chicken that's completely healthy, but it was slaughtered by a non-Jewish person who used a shochet's knife, beautiful shochet's knife, but it was slaughtered by a non-Jew. It's not kosher. Or it was slaughtered by the biggest rabbi in the world, but the knife has a nick in it. Not kosher. Why? That's the way the Torah says, and many other laws, and so on. So kosher is not logical. It's one of that category of mitzvahs that are not logical, which in Hebrew are called chukim, illogical laws. Supra-rational is the nicer way to say it. It's above logic, and it means that there is clearly a logic to it. Hashem has a logic and a reason, and we simply don't know the reason. According, when you study Kabbalah, you study the mystical, so you see not the reason, but you see the effect. So it's like saying, I don't know why a knife I don't know why a knife, or a bullet, if you shoot somebody, I don't know why the guy dies, but I do know the guy will die if you shoot a bullet in his head. So once you begin to study medicine, then you realize that, you know what, there's a process of brain a function, and there's a process of blood flow, and then you understand the reason why a person will die, to give you an extreme example, after you shoot them. But a simple person knows, I want to kill somebody, you shoot them in the head. That's it, plain and simple. I don't know why I'm giving such a brutal example. But even on the good side, I don't know why I feel good when I drink a cup of coffee in the morning. It gives me a certain rush of energy. I have no idea why. But I do know that the net effect of drinking a cup of coffee in the morning is it gives you a jolt of energy. So that's an example of what the mystics teach us concerning, for example, the paraduma. We don't know why the energy flows a certain way, but the mystics do teach us, and Kabbalah and the Zohar does teach us, that the energy flow, that there is an energy flow, and exactly what the energy flow is. Again, the why, that we don't know. So that's the supra-rational part. There's other mitzvahs, many other mitzvahs that are not rational. The mitzvah of shatnez, for example, you're not allowed to wear a mixture of wool and linen together in your clothing. And it's terrible, considered to be a great, great, terrible sin if you wear a mixture of wool and linen, which is very commonly found in more expensively made clothing. A lot of times the buttons are sewn on with linen on a wool jacket. Sometimes you'll have linen in the stiffener of a jacket, or just for decoration, wool and linen together. It's considered to be a terrible grave sin, a really it's so such a grave sin that if you see someone in the street wearing wool and linen, you're supposed to take it off them in the middle of the street, even if you leave them naked. And if you daven wearing wool and linen, your davening is not accepted. Don't ask. It's considered to be a very grave sin.
Rabbi, sorry. So we can't wear wool and linen in one piece of clothes, or just in general together?
One piece, so sewn together. Fat,
So we
fat.
should check always the material, the fabric when we buy clothes.
Yes. If you're buying, I mean, today so much stuff is made from synthetics. It's not wool and linen, this and that. But if you think it might be wool and linen, then yes, you have to get it checked. And there are certain countries where wool and linen is more is either cheaper or more available, and therefore they do make the stuff out of wool and linen. So yeah, you got to check this. There are cleaners and other places in the frum neighborhoods where they have shatnez checkers. The shatnez checkers, they check it by taking some fibers from the suspected area, putting it under a microscope, and you can see the fibers of wool and linen, what they look like. So that's important to know. I'm just giving you examples of mitzvahs that you wouldn't even think about, but they're completely not rational. And they are very important mitzvahs. They're very need to be kept. So this is one category of mitzvah, and that's a category of chukim. And we're not talking about that category in this week's parsha. The second category that is also not apparently logical, but it's completely logical once you know the backstory, and that's testimonial mitzvahs. And every country, every people has testimonial things, ceremonial things, testimonial things that they do to remember their history. So in the United States, we have the 4th of July. If you ask somebody, why are you celebrating this day? It's just a regular day out of the year. It's a thing. What do you mean? I'm American. The 4th of July is a big deal because of this thing that happened in our event. We declared independence from Britain. Da, da, da. But if you didn't know about it, you saw somebody celebrating taking off from work on a regular Monday, whatever day it is, then you would say, what's wrong with you? But once you understand the backstory, you understand. So for us Jews, it's Shabbos. Shabbos is a testimonial mitzvah. Why do we celebrate Shabbos? Why do we keep the laws of Shabbos? Because Hashem rested on Shabbos, and because we want to declare that Hashem is the creator of the world, and we believe Hashem can take care of our life, even though it seems to be complicated and things seem to be difficult. We don't have to worry every single day. And Hashem, who took us out of Egypt, can take us out of any tsaris in our life. That we don't have to be working 7 days a week. We can take off a day from work. And that's what it says in the Ten Commandments, and that says in the Torah. Shabbos is a reminder of both of creation and also of Hashem's ability to control and run the world and give us what we need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So Shabbos is a testimonial mitzvah, the second category. The other holidays are also testimonial mitzvahs. So Pesach, you sit down on the Seder and you eat this dry bread called matzah and you bitter herbs. Person says, what are you doing? This looks so funny. This doesn't taste like some kind of amazing dish, but you're dressed up and you're. And the answer is, well, our ancestors were slaves in Egypt 2,000, 3,300 years ago plus. And we are remembering that every single year since. And so that's a testimonial mitzvah. So it's not logical on its face, but once you know the backstory, completely logical. The third category, which is what we're dealing with in our parsha, is called in Hebrew mishpatim, and that means literally civil or logical law. And every nation has the same laws, and every nation has similar laws, and that is basically don't kill, don't steal, don't take advantage, don't swear falsely, things that are interpersonal laws that are intended for the betterment of society and for the regularly ordering of orderly and just groups of people. So we understand these laws. These are, in the language of the Gemara, even if the Torah would not, God forbid, have been given to us, the Gemara says, we would still be learning that you shouldn't steal. We would learn that from the animals. We see how the animals don't steal from each other. The ant doesn't steal from a fellow ant, and so on. And we would learn modesty from the cats who, when they go to the bathroom, they cover up. What we would learn, these are all logical things. So in this week's parsha called Mishpatim, we learn about that third category, or if you want to categorize as the first category, we learn the category called Mishpatim. The Torah tells us 53 mitzvahs, 53 mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs are Mishpatim, but most are these logical mitzvahs, but most of them are. And we talk about the not to assault, not to commit assault and battery. We talk about not to steal somebody's things if they give you the things to watch. We talk about how to make sure your animals don't harm other people, how to make sure that your property doesn't harm other people. So there are most of them with lending money to poor people. If a person is in need of a loan, it's the highest form of tzedakah, because whereas you're giving tzedakah, it's an outright thing where you're giving a person a loan. It allows them to go into business and take care of themselves. So the mitzvah of lending money without interest in this week's parsha. And we have not to curse a judge and so on, to be respectful of the judicial system. So not everything is the Mishpatim laws, but they're mostly Mishpatim laws, the laws that deal with Jewish civil law, pretty much not to harm other people by assault and battery, and laws against manslaughter and so on. So what to do if a person commits manslaughter, kills somebody by accident, what to do. So that is this week's Torah portion. The parsha opens up, and that's what I want to talk about today. The parsha opens up with the words, Ve'ele ha-mishpatim, and these are the laws. Ve'ele, and these are the laws. Rashi asks the question, why does it say Ve'ele, and these are the laws? It should say Ele, these are the laws. Why the word and? Every letter in the Torah is precise, especially if it's an entire word. In Hebrew, it's just one letter Vav, but in English, it's a whole word. And Rashi makes the comment that these and these are the laws means just as the previous laws, which we read about in last week's Parsha, and the previous story we read about in last week's Parsha, is the story of the Jews gathering at Mount Sinai, and Hashem telling us the Ten Commandments, which not all the Ten Commandments we know are these arcane, unable to be understood laws. Some of them are, we're talking about keeping Shabbos, we're talking about belief in Hashem, belief in God, faith, and so on. Even that's logical, pretty much, that there's a creator. But half the Ten Commandments talks about don't murder, don't kidnap, don't commit adultery, don't be jealous of what other people have, which will lead you to steal. So the Rashi tells us, Ve'ele ha-mishpatim, not only were those laws given at Sinai, but these laws were given at Sinai also. In other words, a person shouldn't think to themselves, the Torah is this mystical document, this document that is only talking about deep, deep mystical concepts, but the ordinary stuff, that's Hashem doesn't mix into. You know, people have this idea in their head that when you come to Davin, what should you ask for? You should ask for spiritual things. Hashem, don't bother Hashem with your physical stuff. You need money? Go to work. Don't Davin for money. You need health? Okay, health already is a little more. Go to the doctor. You know, the doctor can't help you, then you go to Davin. The Torah is teaching us exactly the opposite has to be our approach. The entire world around us is spirituality, is Hashem's gift to us. And anytime something is missing in our surrounding that we feel we need, where do we get it from? We get it from Hashem. So if we need it, we start our day, therefore, with davening. The first thing we do every morning is we say, Moda ani lefanecha, thank you, Hashem. Shechzarta binishmas, you gave me back my soul, and I'm ready now to go through my day. The Torah teaches us the very first thing after the Ten Commandments are given, immediately the Torah gives us civil law, which seems to be something that is a demotion from the high. We're talking about people who are stealing, and I'm still going to get into the civil law that the parsha opens up with, and we'll ask that question. But we're talking about committing assault and battery. These are people who have just gathered at the foot of Mount Sinai. They've just had this incredibly spiritual experience we read about last week's parsha, where they saw spirituality, they saw the holiness. They heard Hashem. We heard God speaking to us. The first two of the Ten Commandments, each Jew, every single Jew, till the end of time, was ever going to live, was there, at least when our neshamas were there. We all heard Hashem speaking to us. So the very next thing we say is, don't commit assault and battery. Don't commit manslaughter. Be careful how you're driving. Be careful how you're chopping your wood so the axe handle doesn't fly off that. What a demotion. What a dash of cold, what a bucket of cold water on your head. And the answer is, it's not a demotion. That itself is spirituality. The essence of Hashem's interaction with us is the big wide world that we are living in. Every part of the world is Hashem's creation. And every moment of our existence is Hashem's Hashgacha Prati, is Hashem's divine providence. God is watching over us, and Hashem is giving us opportunities through the mitzvahs to elevate the world. So the Gemara says, Yashav velo avar aveir, if a person is sitting and had the opportunity, the temptation to do a sin, but you did not do that sin, you did a mitzvah. Fully, more than half the Torah is negative mitzvahs. That means things you shouldn't be doing. There are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. Of the 613, 248 are positive mitzvahs, things you should do. And 365, the days of the year, are negative, things you shouldn't do. Not all of them applies to every single person under every circumstance, as you understand, for any system of laws. Not every law applies to every single person under. But there are more things that you shouldn't be doing than things that you should be doing. And what it is telling us is, and the Gemara says that by not doing them, if we have the opportunity to do them, we don't do them, we fulfill a mitzvah. So what that tells you is that spirituality is to be found not just by climbing high mountains and meditating in a grass hut and a bed of nails and you know, having complete self-sacrifice and... No, spirituality will be found in your everyday life. Spirituality is found by dedicating, by having in mind that what you're doing for the purpose, a greater, a noble purpose, a purpose of serving Hashem. It's by having in mind that what you're doing for bringing holiness into the world. And every aspect, therefore, of our lives can be made holy if we are aware. So even if we're not aware, we're still doing mitzvahs. The Gemara makes the comment that the simplest Jew who you think hasn't done a single mitzvah, that Jew is as full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate is full of seeds. That's what the Gemara says. And so we are all full of mitzvahs. We should be aware of that fact. We should be aware that the world around us is in fact Hashem's direct, as we spoke about in Tanya so many times, especially now we're starting the second part of Tanya, where the Alter Rebbe really does hammer this message home in so many beautiful ways, that the world around us is simply Hashem's energy. And therefore, every time that you want to do something and you don't do it, that you are actually fulfilling the greatest of mitzvahs by respecting that energy. And every time you do something positive, great mitzvah too, and so on. So that's the first opening of the parsha, where Rashi says "V'ele hamishpatim," and these are the laws. It means, just as the previous laws in last week's parsha come from Mount Sinai, is a meaning. It's a conversation and a connection with the divine. So too, the laws that appear to be so simple and so obvious, and every nation has them too. No, that is a conversation also with the divine. That is also a connection to Hashem. And that is also a method of elevating ourselves in the world around us. So let's talk about how the parsha actually opens. What is the first set of mitzvahs, you would think? So after this whole introduction, you would think that what is the first set of mitzvahs is something like really amazing. The first set of mitzvahs that the parsha opens up with is, what happens If you have a guy who is very poor, or a guy who is very dishonest. Doesn't mean a poor person is dishonest, but these are the two possibilities for the following scenario. This person decides, if he's very poor, the Torah says he has the possibility of selling himself into what we call indentured servitude. The person is indentured. That means a person is sold, sells himself to another Jew who will, for a certain period of time, the Torah says the period of time is generally 6 years, will guarantee this person's employment. And for that period of time, that person is who sells himself is not allowed to leave. That's the contract that he makes. He's not allowed to leave that person's employment. And he's called, in the language of the Torah, he's called an Eved Ivri, a Jewish servant. A Jewish, word Eved can be translated as slave too, but he's not a slave. He's an indentured servant. You cannot mistreat, misuse, use this person for any kind of menial stuff if he's being hired for something that's greater purpose. Like you hire him to be your accountant, you can't use him to be your janitor. So, and if there's one pillow in the house, the Gemara says one blanket in the house, and it's cold, you got to give it to this guy. So this is an indentured servant who sells himself for a period of 6 years, and the reason is because he has no money, so he's not able to make it on his own. He sells himself to another Jew, who is obviously a kind-hearted person who is looking to help somebody get a step up in life. But the net effect is that the person who sells himself is attached, indentured, cannot leave for a period of 6 years. The other way for a person to get sold to another Jew is if you steal money. So if you steal, in Judaism, the penalty for theft is not getting put in jail. The penalty for theft is paying back double the principal. And exactly the same amount. You wanted to take $100 out of that guy's pocket, you're going to lose $100 after you make him whole the first $100. So you pay back double. And obviously, this guy who's stealing, assuming that he's not a terrible person, really, he just needs money. So this is a poor person. So he gets arrested for theft, for stealing, comes to the Beit Din, comes to court, and the court says, sorry, but the law is, you stole, and the law is you have to pay back double. Please go ahead. We're fine. We're not. Well, it's the second part is a fine, obviously. We're ruling that you got to pay back double. And the guy says, "Me pay back double? I have no money. Why do you think I stole in the first place?" So they say, "No problem. We're going to sell you to another Jew, and you will have to work for that Jew for 6 years. That Jew will forward a certain amount of money for this amount of time that you're working. And that amount of money we're going to give to the person from whom you stole." And that's how we have an orderly society. So what happens is the Torah says the person who got who the you know the victim gets his money back. The perpetrator, the thief, is put into a productive environment and learns, maybe he learns a trade, maybe he's just in a house, we know, with a 3 meals a day and a place to sleep. That's how the Torah says you create an orderly environment. Torah goes on to say that if this individual wants to stay longer than 6 years, he can. There is an opportunity for him to stay up until the Yovel, the Jubilee year, which is a fixed year that happens every 50 years. That's the maximum. And after that, he must leave. After that, he has to go free. He cannot stay indentured to another Jew. And the Torah says the reason is because you Jews, even if you mess up, even if you're incapable of doing it on your own, and you want to be attached to somebody else, you should know that that's not right. You should know that you should turn to me, Hashem, because you are my servants and you're not the servants of to somebody else. So this is how the Torah opens up the Parsha of Mishpatim, with the laws of what's called the Eved Ivri, the Jewish servant. And the deeper message is that each and every one of us, of course, is in this situation. Each and every one of us needs more money. Each and every one of us needs to atone for something. We're not tzaddikim, unfortunately. I wish we would be, but the Gemara says that tzaddikim are very few and far between. Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya that even the ability to become a tzaddik, a perfect tzaddik, everybody can become a beinoni, meaning everybody can act perfectly, but to be a perfect tzaddik, not to have the temptation that is driving you or pushing you in any direction, that's almost impossible. Alter Rebbe says only a few people in a generation. So what is the solution? The solution is that we should be recognizing that we need to apprentice ourselves to a greater cause. What does that mean? Very simple. What's the difference between a person that goes into business on their own versus a person that apprentices themselves to somebody else? The answer is the apprentice can't do it. Because if you could do it, if you're able to go into business on your own, you would. Why would you work for somebody else if you could work for yourself? The only reason to work for somebody else is because that person has more resources, more cash, more experience, more something, more connections, and you need to access that person. And eventually, at the back of your mind, you're probably hoping, yeah, one day I'm going to be that person who has the cash, the connections, the resources, and I'm going to work for myself. And in fact, that's what happens many times. You hire somebody, he's an amazing worker, and eventually that person goes out, strikes out on their own, maybe even a competing business. Who knows? Hopefully there's goodwill between the people if that happens. But that's what happens. So the Torah opens up and tells us that this concept of Eved Ivri, this concept of us being an Eved to an Ivri, and there is a very interesting, the Torah uses the word Ivri here. Ivri is a Jewish person. Why is an Ivri a Jewish person? So this comes from, and we find this in the Torah, in the Chumash, that when the Torah is talking about a Jew, it specifically, the Torah calls us an Ivri, when you're talking about a Jew as opposed to a non-Jew. So for example, when Joseph was taken out of prison by the Pharaoh who was needed him to interpret his dreams. So the Torah says that the butler who advised Pharaoh to take Joseph out of prison, there was a Nar Ivri. There was an Ivri. Abraham was called Abraham HaIvri. The original patriarch Abraham is the Ivri. And Ivrit, of course, is the language that we speak, is Ivrit. But fine, we're called Ivri. In the Chumash, we're called Ivri. As a group, we're called Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel. But when the Torah wants to refer to an individual Jew, for whatever reason, the Torah doesn't say a Ben Yisrael or a Bat Yisrael. The Torah says an Ivri. Later on, in the book of in the words of the Nevi'im, the words of the books of the Nevi'im, the prophets, for example, in the book of Esther, very famously, were called Yehudim. That's where we're called Jews. So the word Jew is an anglicization of Judah. Jew comes from Judah. And Judah is an anglicization of Yehuda. So Yehuda is the tribe. And it was the country eventually, because if you know Jewish history, the land of Israel was divided into two countries at a certain point. 10 tribes seceded and formed their own northern part of Israel, their own country, and that was called the Yisrael, and the southern part was called Yehuda, so we're called Yehudim, therefore. Very interesting what's in a name. And very interesting what the name implies. A name clearly is a reason why a name was given. Just to tell you a complete story. Later on, of course, we are called Jews, Yehudim, but that's not until the later writings of the Nevi'im, of the prophets. In the Chumash itself, we are called Ivrim. And the word Aver, Ivrim, means aside. Literally, it means the person who came from the other side of the river, because Abraham had crossed the Euphrates River to come to, he lived in Iraq. He crossed the Euphrates River to come to the land of Israel, land of Canaan. And therefore, we were known as the people from the other side, the Ivrim, the people on the other Aver. The Aver means aside. But it's not an accident that we're called the people on the other side. We Jews are perennially on the other side. Talk about, unfortunately, the anti-Semitism that we have. We're on the other side. The whole world is against us. Does every single non-Jew hate a Jew? No. But the Gemara tells us, and none other personage than Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar, says, and Rashi quotes it, and we had this earlier, when Yaakov meets his own brother, his twin brother Esav, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, Halacha, the general ruling is that Esav sone le Yaakov, that a non-Jew hates a Jew. That's the way it is. It's ingrained. It's a sense of jealousy that's ingrained. Doesn't mean that every non-Jew is bad. Of course not. God forbid to say that. The Torah at the same time gives seven mitzvahs to the non-Jews, and Rambam writes that a non-Jewish person that keeps the seven mitzvahs gets share in the world to come, gets reward, and so on. But it does mean that there is an inborn something that, if not properly tended to and properly addressed, there is a natural, it's like saying a kid is naturally selfish. A child is naturally jealous. A child, people naturally get angry. It doesn't mean everybody's angry. It doesn't mean everybody's jealous. There's wonderful people, a lot of beautiful people. But it does mean that if you don't take care proactively of that part of your personality, you're going to fall into that trap of being jealous, angry, etc. So just to make that clear. We Jews are naturally on the other side. We, for whatever reason, and you know, there's good reasons to go into that, why that is, but it's clear on the good too. So I just saw a statistic. Somebody keeps posting all these wonderful statistics about us. So 22% of the Nobel Prize winners are Jews. That's what I just saw. I don't know if it's exact or not exact, but somebody just posted that somewhere. I just saw it. So clearly, we're on the other side. We're on the other side of accomplishment-wise. We're on the other side when it comes to anti-Semitism. We're always Israel is given, you know, resolutions in the UN like nobody's business. Nobody has such resolutions in the UN like Israel has. Everybody's concerned about Israel. Who cares about, you know, 500,000 people in Syria dying? That doesn't make a difference. So we are on the other side. And the Torah teaches us in the beginning of the parsha that that's not a bad thing as long as it's a process, as long as it's a mechanism to get to greater. We are called Eved Ivri, we're called a slave of an Ivri, of a Jew. So each and every one of us should be in that mindset. We should be in that mindset that we have to start out with this oppositional mindset. And that creates a certain type of electricity, a certain type of friction. A certain type of friction is created by electricity. Electricity is created by friction. Without friction, you don't have electricity. So it creates a certain type of energy. And Hashem, who creates us that way? Hashem creates us that way. Hashem creates, the Gemara says, the Jewish person is born with the Yetzer Hara many years before you get your complete Yetzer Tov. You don't get your Yetzer Tov fully until you're Bar and Bat Mitzvah. But your Yetzer Hara, your natural instincts to be self-centered, which is what the Yetzer Hara is, and therefore to mess up in different ways, that you get when you're born. Your full power to be holy and spiritual, you don't get until you have reached maturity, which is 12 or 13 years old, Bar Bat Mitzvah. So what do you have to do? You have to be oppositional. You got to fight. Hashem puts the Yetzer Hara into us many years before Hashem gives us the Yetzer Tov. What that simply means is we have more experience pushing back against different things in our lives that are trying to schlep us down because of the way we're set up, because the way Hashem creates us. We are all Ivrim. We're all on the other side. We're all trying to reach, we're coming from one side, trying to reach the other side. That's the definition of the Jew in the Chumash. We're Ivrim. We're people that are crossing from one side to the next, which is a big compliment also. Means we're all immigrants. We all worked to get to where we are. We had to proactively work through the place that we came from and move from that place and get to a new place. Having said that, the Torah says, yes, it's important to recognize that you have to move from the place you are. It's important to be an Ivri, an Eved Ivri, meaning to be a servant or an indentured servant to this process of being an Ivri, because that's what an Eved Ivri is. If you're apprenticing yourself to somebody, it's because you want to learn from that person. You want to be like that person. So we are all supposed to be apprenticed to this Ivri concept, but only for a period of time, 6 years. The number six is very important because the number six, if you know Kabbalistically, the number six is the emotional process that works through from Chesed Bina, not Chesed Bina, what am I saying? From Chesed Gvura Teferes Netzach Hod and Yesod, the number six is an emotional process that builds us up. And even in the days of the week, the number six is the 6 days of the week of work. Then comes Shabbos. So same is true on the spiritual side in this Sefirot. There are six Sefirot, and then comes a Sefirah called Malchus, which is kingship, which is royalty, the sense of being regal, being above everything, just accomplishing through speech, being able to actually have the whole process come to fruition. So therefore, this is the message at the beginning of the Parsha, that the world around us is there in order for us to use as a platform for elevating our connection with Hashem. The work that we do during the 6 weeks, the attitudes that we have, just going through life in general, this is all opportunities that Hashem is giving us to be special people. Hashem is giving us not only the opportunity to be special people and to work through it, but also the opportunity to reach a plateau, to reach a level that we will no longer then have to work through this process, and that's a level of Mashiach. So therefore, the beginning of the parasha teaches us that the process of this entire Mishigas world that we're living through, where we have to work, and we have to worry, and we have to this process is temporary. It's only, you should note, yes, you stole money, meaning yes, you have, you're operating with a negative. Or let's talk about the other side where the guy didn't steal, but he just doesn't have any money, and therefore, so yes, you're in a bad position, and yes, you're going to be indentured for 6 years, but then you will go free. The Torah tells us also, it's not in this week's parsha, but it is later on. We're going to read that later in the Chumash, that when the Eved Ivri is set free, the master must give that person additional monies and gifts from every type of possession that he owns in order to allow this person to get set up on their own 2 feet. Today we would call it a bonus. Not a severance pay per se, but like a bonus. So if a person works for you for a year, 10 years, 20 years, and then they retire, give them a certain amount of money when they retire. Usually it's a month for a year, if you can afford it. You know, some kind of money that you put away in order to have when you give this person, when this person leaves your employment. So Hashem gives us the same thing. Hashem puts this law into the Torah and gives us the same thing. That when Mashiach comes, the net of the reward is going to be much greater than the work that we put in. Just like the Eved Ivri gets paid for his 6 years, but when he leaves, he gets what's called ha'anaka. He gets this gift that the master gives him for every type of thing the master owns. If you have sheep, a little sheep. If you have goats, a little goats. Cows, a little cow. Chickens, a little chicken. Whatever it is. Hashem gives us, therefore, we put the energy in. We apprentice ourselves to the process of Torah and mitzvahs. We say, and then Hashem brings us Mashiach and gives us yet much, much more. So that is a little message for Parshas Mishpatim to get us started for this Shabbos.
Rabbi, very quick summary for Shabbat table, because I'm actually going to be doing the Torah portion at Patrick's house in Florida.
So a quick summary, the elevator speech is that in our Torah, we have three kinds of commandments. The kind that we talk about in this week's Parsha are the logical commandments, the civil Jewish civil law, which is logical, And the Torah teaches us that in our ordinary life, we have the opportunity to be extremely powerfully holy, different than everybody else, even though we act the same. So when it comes to civil law, there's no difference between a Jew and a non-Jew. If you're keeping the laws, the non-Jew doesn't steal, the Jew doesn't steal. The non-Jew doesn't commit manslaughter, the Jew doesn't commit. Non-Jew is honest, the Jew is honest. What's the difference? Yet the Torah tells us there is a difference. Because we as Jews are supposed to be doing the mitzvahs as an eved ivri, as a indentured servant to our master, Hashem, for the purpose of changing the world. And if you want to know, and I didn't express this earlier, but if you want to know, this is the real kernel, the real secret of the Jewish power. Everybody else, wonderful people. But they are working and doing and being good, kind, and honest for the stability of the environment, of the community, of the world, of the population, which is another way of saying of themselves. Why don't you steal? Why don't you kill? Why don't you commit assault and battery? Because if you did that, this world would be a terrible place to live in. And you should care for somebody else, just like they care. You want them to care for you. You care for them. Why do we Jews keep the mitzvahs? For Hashem. Yes, of course, you need to have an orderly place. Yes, of course, you can't commit assault and battery and all kinds of things because that's going to destroy the fabric of society. But that's not why. That's just a result. The why, I spoke earlier about the difference between the result of doing something versus the why of doing something. Yeah, the result of having honest people is that you have an orderly society and it's a wonderful place to live and you go to sleep at night and you're so happy. That's the result. But the why is because Hashem wants it that way. The why is because by doing so, we introduce spirituality into the world. So therefore, just to restate it, Parshas Mishpatim, which is the laws that are civil law, teaches us as Jews that even and especially when we are following civil law, which seems to be exactly the same as everybody else's law, we're doing it for a different reason, a much deeper purpose, to introduce holiness and to introduce spirituality into the world, to deepen our connection with Hashem. And we also believe that that will lead to a time when Hashem will repay us in much greater measure than anything that we're doing, and that's the coming of Mashiach. So therefore, immediately upon acting in a civilly responsible manner, we're already talking about higher spiritual concepts, talking about the coming of Mashiach. Where he says, talk about Mashiach when you study Torah, talk about Mashiach when you keep Shabbos, that's going to bring Mashiach. You're going to give tzedakah to the point where you're giving your way almost your last dollar, that's going to bring Mashiach. You know what's going to bring Mashiach? Living a civil life, living mitzvahs, doing every mitzvah, every process that we do brings spirituality into the world and brings, therefore, the coming of Mashiach, the 6 years that we work, and then we go free, meaning we are reunited with our true essence and we're no longer involved in the process. So I don't know if that's clear or not clear, but hopefully the message is coming through. Let me know if you need it restated. I'll try to restate it again.
What happens if we have a non-Jewish person coming to Shabbat?
Non-Jewish person coming to Shabbat, you can still talk about the same thing, which is the power to bring God into your environment by simply acting in a socially conscious manner. And I mean, that is at the end of the day what it's all about. God is not, I sort of started the conversation by saying that you don't just daven for spiritual things. You daven for money. You daven when you need to have, peace of mind. You daven for everything. So the Torah is teaching us that our relationship with our Creator is not in some kind of a box that, you know, when I go to shul, then I have a relationship with Hashem. On Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, high holidays, relationship with Hashem. No, every moment of our life is a relationship with our Creator, because every moment of our life, our Creator is giving us life. So of course it has to be a relationship with our Creator. Every moment of life, Hashem is recreating, reconnecting with us every moment. If not, we wouldn't be here. So even what appears to be ordinary civil law, that's holiness. That itself is a way of connecting with Hashem, with God, with your Creator. And that's the message for a Jew or for a non-Jew. The difference is, you know, the level of connection, the level of maybe of reward, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, Hashem gives non-Jews these mitzvahs too, the seven mitzvahs that Hashem gave Noach, Adam, and then Noach added a seventh mitzvah, the mitzvah of not being cruel to animals, which extends today to every non-Jewish person. Hashem is giving every non-Jewish person mitzvahs too. Not as many and not the same, but these civil mitzvahs are also given to the non-Jews. And the reason is the same, because the non-Jews are expected to also have a relationship with the Creator, who is their Creator, just like He's our Creator. And it's the same message. The message is that through living a moral life, an honest life, a life where we care for the next person, I mentioned to you the one of the mitzvahs in the Torah, this week's parsha is lending money to the person who needs money, assuming that, you know, you have the wherewithal to do it, and assuming the person you believe will pay you back. I mean, you can give an outright gift, obviously, but we're not talking about giving a gift. We're talking about lending money. So assuming that the situation is lending, is ripe for that, lending money is one of the mitzvahs in this week's parsha. Caring for someone else's ability to provide for themselves is in this week's parsha. Let alone not to committing assault and battery, taking away their ability to provide for themselves. So part of the mitzvahs of this week's parsha is living an ordinary, civilly responsible, civilly honest life, but imbuing that with holiness. That is true for Jews and non-Jews. There is no difference in the connection